This is Apollo Control, Houston, at 3 hours, 55 minutes into the flight. That we have additional comm here, but at this point we're going to join a post-launch press conference at the Cape. Let's switch to the Cape.
For Dr. Von Braun, this seems to be the day that you've lived for most of your adult life. Is it hard to believe that it's really here?
I can't deny that I'm very happy today. We have lived and worked for this day, not just I myself, but all my associates, and in this case it includes, I believe, several hundred thousand people to this success, and needless to say, very gratifying to see that we're successful.
Pete Reich of Chicago's American, Dr. Von Braun. Would you carry that further, sir? Would you be a little philosophical about what this means to the world and mankind, the first out-of-this-world journey, the first people going to another place, a place other than Earth?
Well, I think this flight will be duly recorded as man's first step really away from his abode and to another heavenly body. On the other hand, I think it will not be the only flight. There will be many, many flights to follow.
Go ahead, Phil. Did you have a question? Go ahead, Brett.
Okay. Question about the first stage rocket, which I understand fell very near to a U.S. ship in the Atlantic.
Mm-hmm.
None of us at the table had heard that report. I heard on our network that the recovery party that was in the plan to recover the cassettes that were dropped out of the first stage also observed the reentry and breakup and flash of the first stage, but that's all I've heard.
Reg, we'll check on that for you. I haven't heard that report either, maybe, but we've been over in the control center also. Go ahead, Sue.
General Phillips, if continues to go well with this flight, and if you have a successful LEM flight in low Earth orbit on Apollo 9, will you be prepared to commit Apollo 10 to the moon landing mission?
Our present plans are to fly Apollo 9 as an Earth orbital mission with the LEM, and I hope we will be able to fly it at the end of February or the 1st of March. Our present plans are to fly Apollo 10 2.5 or so months later, again as an all-up vehicle with a LEM manned, and our present plans are to fly that flight into lunar orbit. But not to make a landing, to leave and to come back without a landing. We have the flexibility in our program to fly either more or less, and I think you've seen us have to demonstrate that in many ways over the years. Our present plans, however, are to not commit Apollo 10 to a lunar landing.
Go ahead.
I've heard it said that if you were to decide, General Phillips, to land Apollo 10, that you would have to use the lunar module that is now scheduled for Apollo 11, make that change. Is that true? And if so, how far in advance of Apollo 10's planned launch date would you have to start doing that?
Well, it is correct that the that LEM 4, which is committed to Apollo 10, does not have, it is not capable of making the landing according to our present payload and weight and performance scheme. LEM-5, which is committed to Apollo 11, is fully capable of meeting the payload requirements for a lunar landing. So it is clear that to carry out a landing, we would, the earliest LEM that we would expect to use is LEM 5. And if we were to make the bold move that some of you are suggesting, which is to land on Apollo 10 equivalent, then we'd need to be deciding rather immediately, because LEM 4 is well along in its checkout here at KSC, and it won't be very many days until LEM 4 will be committed to and installed on the launch vehicle. And it, beyond that, then, the only practical scheme of landing on Apollo 10 as a number would be to bypass that vehicle and roll out the one that includes LEM 5. Those are all possibilities, but I hasten to add that they are exceedingly optimistic possibilities, and I think most of us in the Apollo program believe that as our experience continues to mount, we will still feel that we want to fly the LEM twice before as a manned vehicle before committing it to a landing. Now, circumstances can change, and we might want to exercise a more ambitious option, and that's why I'm trying to describe clearly what the possibilities are.
Yeah, as if we were, if you were to make such a decision, would we then expect to see signs of it within the next, say, couple of weeks, if you were going to have it?
I think I can assure you without any fear of anybody contradicting me that you will not see any such signs over the next small number of weeks.
Go ahead, Mary.
A few questions as usual. Mary Buff, Fairchild Publications. I gather from the flawless flight everything went well, but I was wondering if there was any extra vibration noticed at all in the pogo effect in the first stage and from the J-2s in the second and third.
We had communications from the crew during flight which indicated that there was no pogo effect whatsoever during the first stage or second or third stage flight. There was an indication of a very slight transient longitudinal vibration at the second stage transition point from lean to fuel rich mixture. We have a mixture ratio shift, an intentional mixture ratio shift during the second stage flight, where we go from more thrust to better fuel economy, so to speak. At this point, the thrust is reduced by about 20%, and the crew reported that they felt this very distinctly. Now, as the thrust is reduced, of course, the vehicle, previously compressed like a spring, is a bit unloaded, and so there was a sensation of a little longitudinal vibration for this spring unloading to decay, but you cannot call that a pogo effect. This was expected and quite natural, and nothing we can do about it or would do about it.
As a matter of fact, if I could add to that, it was reported, and I didn't personally hear any of the crew say it, but it was reported that the crew said that that was the smoothest first stage ride and the smoothest second stage ride and the smoothest third stage ride that they'd ever had. I think that was attributed to Borman, but I think it bears out that this is now a very, very smooth, pogo-free vehicle.
This gentleman's been waiting for us. Okay, hold up here. Mary, you go.
My other question was that everybody expected a tremendous amount of interest, public interest in this mission, of course, but I think that the interest has reached sort of fantastic proportions. And I wondered if all of this great interest and the billions of people that will be following the flight might help you in getting more money for post-Apollo.
We're always hopeful. No, we're always hopeful.
I can't comment on that. I can only hope.
Go ahead up here.
Hello. David Spurgeon, the Toronto Globe and Mail. Could you tell us if the difficulties with the LEM trainer will have any effect on the flight of the LEM?
The recent accident with the lunar landing training vehicle certainly does put a crimp in our plans for training flight crews to carry out the lunar landing in the lunar module. The question of whether that accident has any effect on the design and the handling characteristics and the performance of the LEM is, of course, being very carefully examined. There's no reason at this time to believe that the performance characteristics and handling characteristics of the LLTV relate to the handling and stability and performance characteristics of the lunar module. Many, many differences operating in an atmosphere versus no atmosphere. The LLTV uses a throttleable jet engine. The many differences lead me to believe that the control difficulties do not suggest difficulties with controlling the LEM, but that is being carefully reexamined. We will surely have to make some modification to our plan for training flight crews. What the modification will be is also being carefully studied as the investigation proceeds to get at the cause of that accident.
Go ahead, up here, Chuck.
Mission Science Monitor, do you have any report on the condition of the pad as compared also with the previous shot?
I have not had an assessment of the pad as yet. As far as we could see from the launch control center with glasses, it was in very good condition.
This lady's been waiting quite a while, Chuck. Well, why don't we go right into that row there? Is there anybody over here asking? I can't see you over here. This is the problem. Bear with me. Go ahead.
Georgie Virgie, Montgomery County Sentinel. In relation to the Earth, where geographically was the command module when the translunar coast began? In other words, over what area was it flying?
Oh, the translunar injection burn was accomplished over the Pacific Ocean, and we were tracking it or communicating with it through the Mercury, which is stationed in the Pacific. And the land station over which it passed next was it was over the Western Pacific, to be specific.
If I can make an announcement, we are getting word from Houston that there's the air-to-ground conversations are continuing. I'd like to suggest, everything still appears to be going fine, but I'd like to suggest that we consider coming to an end here shortly so we can all get back to the mission. Take this gentleman here and two up there, and then I'd like to complete it. I'm sorry, we just have to put everything together. If you have some other questions, we'll try to work it out here, but I think we have to worry about everyone, and I'm afraid this is the best route to go.
Parkinson, Baltimore Evening Sun. I gathered from General Phillips' remarks that the first mid-course correction will be minor. Do you know when we can expect the first SPS burn? Could you guess at the moment? What MCC point?
I think you asked when will we see the first SPS burn? Well, if the mid-course correction is as small as it was being reported before I came over here, then we will not use the SPS for that mid-course correction. in which case it is unlikely that we will need the SPS for any mid-course corrections, in which case it is most likely that the first time an engine will burn will be on lunar orbit insertion burn number one.
Up here.
Tom O'Toole, the Washington Post. Communications with the spacecraft seem excellent from what we heard on The Voice. I wonder if Dr. Clark would comment on that and tell us at this point who is handling communications with which antennas are handling it and how they switch over.
Mr. O'Toole, the improvement in communication, which was quite evident to all of us, was essentially a number of small increments, some of which were implemented on the spacecraft and others in the ground equipment, primarily in the ground operation procedures, involving mainly a selection of that link which is giving the best available communications rather than the previous superposition, as we used in Apollo 7, of several sources of the ground information. And for the most part, in the last orbit, we have been using unified S-band downlink, and this is the link with which we'll be continuing on around the moon, and so I think we can expect a continuation of the very good communications which we have enjoyed. Up till the time that we left the mission, the communications was by way of the omnidirectional antenna, and I guess very close to the present time, the directional antenna will be deployed and checked out. The three ground stations that will be handling the communications during the lunar orbit phase will be the three so-called 85-foot dish sites at Madrid, Goldstone, and in Australia.
This is now in contact with the spacecraft?
Yes,
if they are, when did they take over in the flight?
Essentially at the time of the burn into the lunar trajectory. Goldstone took over at that time, and they are now prime.
Up here.
Norm Heaney, Chumney, Toronto.
Yeah.
There's a lot of interest with regard to the decision to go into lunar orbit, and I wonder if you could just take a few seconds to go over the criteria on which that decision will be based.
I'm leery that I can answer that question in a few seconds. Let me just use a few seconds to comment. The original decision to not fly a LM was reported in very great detail in a press conference and briefing on the 19th of August. Between that time and the 12th of November, our total organization, NASA and the several companies involved, put thousands of man hours into careful analysis of the total program situation to provide a basis for making a decision, and this too was reported in considerable detail on the 12th of November.
Go ahead over here.
Howard Benedict, AP. Dr. Devis, what is the rollout date now for the Apollo 9 vehicle, and will you be able to use Pad A over again, or will you go to Pad B?
Well, I stated before, I have not had a report as yet what the state of Pad A is. I assume it is in excellent shape. So rollout of 504 will be as scheduled. That is in a week or two.
All right. We'll take two more, Mary and Reg, and I'm afraid that'll have to be it.
General Phillips, if you do succumb and commit Apollo 10 to a lunar landing, when would you do so? Would you have to wait until after Apollo 9, or would you make preparations with the idea of sort of pending if Apollo 9's okay?
We are continually taking stock of our total program situation, and we do so especially after each mission. That notwithstanding, I don't myself see a basis on the horizon for such a decision until we have flown Apollo 9. So I don't, at this point, see where we would have additional information or facts on which to base a decision until after we have flown Apollo 9. The situation could change, however, as this various events unfold in coming weeks.
Reg, before we take your question, on your previous question, we have a report from the Department of Defense Support Units that states the first stage was sighted by helicopters about 25 miles away from the nearest ships. This is the latest information we have, the nearest ship. This is the latest information we have on that.
Tell us if you've yet chosen the men who will go on Apollo 11 and will presumably land on the moon, and could you possibly put us out of our misery now by telling us who they are?
The crew selection for Apollo 11 has not been made. The crew selections through 10 have been made and announced. They have not been made beyond 10.
I apologize for anyone I've... Okay, one over here, because we've neglected you, and that'll be the final one. And I apologize to the rest of you, but we have to look after everybody's desires on this, and I think we'll have to get back to the mission.
A somewhat non-scientific question, if I may, for General Phillips, perhaps. What contribution, if any, do you think this success would make towards assuring America's military superiority over the Soviet Union, which is the president-elect's declared policy?
Superiority in space, I think, is demonstrated by accomplishments. I personally believe that the ability of our nation to operate in space is viewed by the world as one of the elements that constitutes a part of our total strength. And I believe that, in part, national strength, as viewed between nations, exists partly in the minds of men and is what people think is your strength. And I believe that our ability or lack of ability, as compared with any other nation, to carry out space operations, constitutes a very important part of our national strength. And in all of with those comments, I believe that Apollo 8 adds one more very important accomplishment to our capability. It puts us a very large step closer to the national goal that we set for ourselves some years ago of carrying out a manned lunar landing. And I think our strength as a nation is definitely enhanced by this and these kinds of operations.
General, I thought you had some closing remarks you wanted to make.
Well, if I may, and this question is a good basis for saying it, the Apollo 8 mission is tremendously important to as a step in our progress toward our manned lunar landing. Which my own confidence continues to be high, we will be able to carry out sometime next year. I also believe that Apollo 8 and each of the manned flights is important to the country as a whole, not only to the Apollo and its progress toward a lunar landing, but important to the country. And I believe that people who made it possible for this mission to fly and take off right on time this morning deserve a tremendous amount of credit. There are people in factories that go back over months and even years that deserve a tremendous amount of credit. But over the weeks that this vehicle has been put together, checked out, and made ready to fly here at the Cape, I think there's been superiorly outstanding work done. And I'm certainly proud of the organization, and I believe that the country should also give the people here at KSC, both government and industry, a vote of thanks for getting this mission off as it was.
Thank you, sir. Over the drone of the engine, I have one other announcement to make. and that is that Mrs. Marilyn Lovell, the wife of astronaut Jim Lovell, is in the Cocoa Beach area, and she will be happy to meet with the news media at 2 p.m. this afternoon. The location will be at the pool at the Holiday Inn in Cocoa Beach. At. Thank you very much.